Welcome to Documenting DH, hosted by the Digital Humanities Research Network at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. In these audio episodes, we interview students and scholars around our campus who are involved in digital humanities projects. Today, we're talking with members of the Ex Libris Project, Kyle Neal, Matthew Mickelson, and Morgan Pabst, three recent graduates of the iSchool at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
The Ex Libris Project is a group project. We are meeting in Memorial Library Special Collections. What we're doing is original research behind manuscripts in the library. We are looking for a story, some kind of really cool tidbit we can pull out of the book and present in a unique way, hence the name Ex Libris, or from the book. So it's a really cool history, digital humanities, library science kind of combination project.
Can you introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about your particular contribution to the project?
My name is Morgan Pabst. I am a second year graduate student in the iSchool. My specific contribution to this project is I am working with a manuscript and a printed text, both called the Jónsbók. Both are ancient Icelandic laws that are still actually used today in some cases. And I'm more so researching about not only the manuscript and the book themselves, but I'm also looking to the history of Chester Thordarson, the man who took the books into his collection, acquired them.
My name is Matthew Mickelson. I'm a second year grad student in the iSchool Library and Information Studies program. And my contribution, so I'm looking at a manuscript, an album Amicorum, attributed to Count Ludwig Eberhard von Hohenlohe, Waldenburg. So what an album Amicorum is basically a yearbook. They have images in there, signatures from friends that they met at university, along with some of them can have song lyrics and just poems and just things like that. So I'm looking at the history of the album and also kind of looking at the family, tracing them from Ludwig Eberhard to the present and contributions made by him and his family to the manuscript.
My name is Kyle Neal. I am also a second year here at UW-Madison, just finishing up the master's program. My part in the Ex Libris project, I'm working with a book called Secrets Revealed, written by George Starkey under the pen name Irenaeus Philalethes in the 17th century. This particular book was owned by Sir Isaac Newton. And it's really interesting because he scribbled a whole bunch in it. He wrote tons of notes and annotations throughout the margins. Very, very interesting book. Exciting research to do. And I've been looking at basically the path that this book took between when Newton owned it, when it was in his personal library, kind of researching about every stop it took in its journey to how it got to special collections here at UW-Madison in the 1950s.
How would you each describe the digital humanities?
Well, digital humanities is a really broad sort of umbrella term. We think about history, we think about libraries, and basically whatever can be defined as a social science, but then it has this digital twist to it where maybe there are new computer-based or digital research trends. Maybe it's how the research is being shared in the example of our project, where it's going to culminate in interactive maps and videos.
I kind of view it as kind of bridging the gap between the digital world and kind of the humanities world, more kind of, you know, art-based, written-based, and just being able to look at things in a new way, just finding new ways to conduct research.
To me, digital humanities is a combination of digital technologies and computing with philosophy, history, and English, as Kyle said, the social sciences. It's a very effective teaching tool, in my opinion. I've worked on numerous digital humanities projects because of my humanistic major in undergrad, and I really think that it's very engaging and helps the audience get engaged with whatever you're working on. And it also can interest them into other subjects. So like what we're doing with our project, our goal is to let the audience know what is out there. Like, they don't just have to go to the archives just for research projects. They can go to see what treasures they can find in there.
Can you talk a little bit about the successes and or challenges that you've had while working on this project?
So I think personally some of the successes that I've had was kind of being able to find out more about this family, because there really wasn't a whole lot out there, but I happened upon this book that we have here at UW-Madison that kind of deals with the history of the Fiedelbach region where this family originated in Germany, and was really happy because I managed to find a couple pages that talked about both Eberhard and about his grandson, who were kind of the two main owners of this the album. So being able to find that was, for me, really a great success. I think the biggest challenge for me was trying to read some of this, because I don't read or speak German, so that's been a little bit difficult, but one of my friends spent a year in Germany, and he has been really helpful, you know, just helping me with these translations and helping me to kind of pronounce some of these towns and cities that I otherwise would not be able to pronounce it all.
We went into Special Collections with the idea where, okay, we know we want to work with old books, these unique manuscripts, but what else? So one of the initial challenges we had to do was sit down with the book and say, okay, what am I going to do with it? What kind of story am I going to tell? What kind of story can I pull out of this? So that was a big challenge to overcome, but individually, we did our research with our own manuscripts, and it's been really, really rewarding to see how the story's unfolded and how that is culminating into these video scripts that we've put together. One specific challenge that I had during my research was I knew of the existence of this document called the Huggins List, which is basically a catalog of Newton's library as sold to a man named John Huggins after Newton died. And a lot of my secondary and tertiary sources I came across mentioned this list. But for the life of me, I couldn't find where it sat, much less what was in it or how it specifically talked about Secrets Revealed, the book that I'm working with. And so after some digging, I didn't really find out that it was sitting in the British Library. I came across the suggestion that it might have been there. So I reached out to the librarians over there, and after quite some time I did hear back, and it ended up that they did have it, and I was able to request a scan and get the specific page that Secrets Revealed is mentioned in. Really, really fun twist with the document is that it was actually withheld from the sale to John Huggins, and that set it on the unique course that it took as opposed to the rest of Newton's library. Not that all of it stayed intact, but this was one of the first manuscripts that kind of was sent off on its own, which was very fun to research about. And also, the Huggins list will be the image that I received from the British Library will be featured in one of my videos as well. So,
I face numerous challenges, from having an emergency gallbladder removed, to computers crashing, to when I went to Special Collections one day to find out the main manuscript I was originally working on, which was the Jan's book, circa 1640, was actually put into exhibit, the Icelandic exhibit at Special Collections. And I had to go and find someone to remove the giant glass case just so I can get my manuscript so I can work further on the project, because I had to start over from the computer crash. But it actually turned out to be a good thing, because I was found out that they had the 1709 printed version of the Jan's book, so a more recent version that was based off of the 1640 version. So I was able to add more to my project, and it made everything come together. I was able to find out more information. I got to learn about both manuscript and the printed book. And I got to learn more about Chester Thordarson himself. And even though I faced all these challenges, I consider that to be a lucky success that I was able to find that.
How would you define the data involved in this project?
So we have, I guess, several different mediums of data that we have compiled or have yet to compile for this project. Ultimately, the main finished product that we're going to have out of this project is a mini video documentary series. Now, we have to collect several different mediums of data to put something like that together. We have audio recordings, we have video recordings, we have scripts that were written up based off of all of the physical research that we did with our manuscripts. The data for this project is not like a streamlined data set that one might think of for, let's say, a science project or something, but a lot of people in the humanities and social science say, well, if I don't have numbers, I don't have data, and that's not true. data for us just looks different.
How might you recommend managing data for humanists?
So I recommend managing data for humanists as one basic and simple is a flash drive. While working on this project, my whole computer crashed and I lost everything that I had gained from last spring. So this fall I had to scramble and rewrite everything. So I highly recommend, even though it's the most basic, simple thing, always save everything on your flash drive. And I highly suggest also saving it to a backup cloud storage area. Like, for instance, we're using Google Docs. So that way we don't lose it, it's always there, we all have a copy of what we're working on.
So good data management, I think, is a great skill for anybody to have. I don't think it looks very different between any researcher, humanist or not. In this day and age where we're using these digital technologies and we're dealing with several different computer programs and maybe some things are compatible with other programs and maybe there aren't, there is just a really streamlined, good way to manage your data. As Morgan was saying, flash drives, maybe it's an external hard drive, maybe it's the cloud. But backups are only one part of that. You need to have your files well organized. Someone else who may be going back and looking at your data after the fact is going to need to be able to navigate it. Data needs to be managed well. It needs to be organized. It needs to be protected.
So in addition to what Kyle and Morgan said, just having a file naming system in place, I have found, is incredibly helpful, because otherwise you may have three things listed as document 1, document 1A, document 1B. Nobody's going to know what that means except you. So having a file naming system in place is extremely important.
What do you find most interesting or exciting about the data that you're working with?
It's exciting how unique our research is. It's really cool to look at these really old and very valuable books and be able to translate our research in a digital medium to share it with other people.
Like what Kyle said, I find the most interesting is actually getting to work with the manuscript itself and getting to show this really cool old manuscript to the world and letting them know that they are these awesome, gorgeous manuscripts or printed books in these special collections that most people think they have to go to for just research. But being able to use like this digital media to show that you don't just have to go there for research. You can go there just for fun, just to look at it. If you have any sort of interest in it, you should just go.
For me also, just being able to correspond with the family in Germany, the Hohenlohe family continues to this day, and they have a really big archive set up dedicated to the history of the family. So being able to correspond with them and kind of, you know, get more information directly from the family has been really, really exciting.
How do you see the Ex Libris project fitting into the digital humanities community here on campus?
So I think the collaboration that we've already been a part of greatly contributes to the digital humanities community here on campus. We've brought in two lectures and workshops that any student on campus were free to attend. We've been collaborating with the iSchool here and with the Special Collections Library, and also the interactive maps and videos that are going to be released by the end of this project are going to be a great advocate for libraries and special collections and these types of digital humanities projects in general.
How do you think the university or universities in general could better support digital humanities research and scholarship?
So I think one way that universities could kind of help would be to, you know, better advertise, better have better marketing strategies when it comes to the digital humanities. You know, just getting the word out there that projects like this exist would be a great way to get students better involved. And also, I think increased funding is another way. You know, budgets are continuously being cut these days, but funding is essential for a lot of the work done within the digital humanities fields. And so without it, a lot of this work, it can't be done. So I think that's really one way that universities can help.
In my opinion, I think the universities could have more support for the digital humanities is through more funding and also through having more classes based on digital humanities. UW-Green Bay, as for an example, is hosting a digital humanities class and they work on a year-long project. They found it to be extremely successful that they're now offering this class spring and fall semester now. And they work on giant projects and they do collaborations with other groups on campus. And I really think that it would be essential to get digital humanities out there, especially on the UW-Madison campus. If they can get more digital humanities classes, they will be able to engage more students, get them more involved, they can get their work out there. And by increasing funding, I have a feeling they could be able to do that.
To be sure, we've already taken advantage of many wonderful opportunities that the university has provided us with resources to get this project done. We have a poster just sitting out here in the library that I believe says something to the effect of, because students can't afford scholarly journals on a ramen budget. And we've been able to take advantage of free video software, audio recording studios, software to edit audio and video. We were able to look at these books and manuscripts, you know, free of charge. It's really cool the opportunities that the university has already been able to provide us to get this project done, which we're definitely very grateful for. That said, it is also a very large time commitment. We're graduate students, we work jobs, you know, we have families. It's very hard to squeeze this in. Sometimes it feels, honestly, like it's already another class. We have weekly meetings, and then we have our quote-unquote homework to get done before the next meeting. We're keeping each other on schedule. So it would be really nice if we could actually get credit for the work that's already being done. It is essentially already another class, after all. So, yeah. If we could turn this into a class and get credit for it, if we could throw some funding into it and get professors in there to actually teach it as if it were a class and organize it, and I feel like this could definitely grow the digital humanities culture that we already do have here on campus.